Welcome to the Lowdown. This is an AI-generated open-source news summary for general informational awareness. This product is not intended for use as official intelligence. The views expressed here are solely those of the cited authors and do not reflect the official policy or position of the Department of War, the United States Air Force, or any other U.S. government agency.
And for today's operational bottom line up front, we are tracking a rapid synchronization of adversarial industrial bases, which is actively shifting global security paradigms from traditional military theaters to commercial logistics and space domains. Adversaries like Iran, Russia, and China are operationalizing dual-use infrastructure and asymmetric mass, forcing a necessary parallel wartime footing within the U.S. defense industrial base. The strategic environment dictates that economic and supply chain targets are now fully integrated into modern combat operations.
Right. So basically, we are looking at this massive, terrifying paradigm shift in global security.
Yeah, it really is.
Today's mission for this deep dive is to explore that rapidly shifting landscape, and we've got a really solid stack of sources to go through.
We do, yeah.
We're pulling from comprehensive CSIS reports on China's commercial space expansion and the U.S. defense industrial base. Plus, we have intelligence updates from ISW covering the Middle East, Russia, and the Korean Peninsula.
Right, along with that defense analysis from the war zone on China's nuclear arsenal and on the ground reporting from Al Jazeera and foreign policy.
Exactly. So what we're teasing out here is a fundamental transition in how superpowers prepare for conflict. We're looking at a landscape where, you know, building a satellite gigafactory or an e-commerce warehouse is just as critical as a nuclear silo.
It's expanding the definition of a military asset, really.
Yeah. But before we get into the weeds, I do want to do a quick tone check for you listening.
Yeah.
Our sources today cover some highly politically charged conflicts and actions by various U.S. administrations.
Right. There's a lot of sensitive material here.
But this briefing is going to remain entirely neutral. We're not endorsing any political viewpoints, and we're not taking sides. We're purely focusing on the facts and the strategic implications presented in this intelligence.
Just sticking to the operational realities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's start by examining the biggest long-term strategic shift here. China's unprecedented industrial scale-up in commercial space and long-range deterrence.
The numbers on this are just staggering.
They really are. Looking at the CSIS Blurred Orbis report, China's commercial space sector has grown from, what, under a dozen firms in 2014 to over 600 today.
Yeah, over 600. And they now have an estimated production capacity of roughly 4,100 to 5,000 satellites per year.
Wait, 5,000 a year? That is massive.
It is. And they're doing this across 17 major facilities. The report details sites like the Wenchang Satellite Gigafactory and Galaxy Space.
Right. And I saw they have this initiative, Beijing's South Rocket North Satellite District Strategy, to foster all this innovation.
Yeah, which on the surface, you know, sounds a lot like the Silicon Valley playbook.
Sure, clustering talent and funding. But it's turbocharged by state power, right?
Exactly. And the underlying concept here is something called military-civil fusion, or MCF.
Okay, can you break that down a bit? How is MCF different from what we do?
Well, in the West, we generally maintain a firewall between commercial enterprise and the military. They work together via contracts, but they are separate entities.
Right, distinct lanes.
Under MCF in China, that firewall doesn't exist. Commercial innovation is legally mandated to advance military modernization simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so these Chinese mega constellation systems like Guang and Thousand Sails, they aren't just commercial rivals to Starlink.
So they aren't just trying to sell broadband to consumers.
Not at all. They are explicitly designed to have dual military functionality. The PLA watched how crucial Starlink was in recent conflicts for drone ops and communications.
Right. And they realized they needed their own highly resilient, redundant military network disguised as a commercial one.
Exactly. And the CSIS reporting on China and Taiwan updates indicates that this exact space architecture is directly tied to the PLA's regional deterrence strategy.
So it has immediate implications for cross-strait relations in Taiwan.
Precisely. You can't separate their commercial space boom from their military posture.
That makes sense. And that industrial capacity is also bleeding over into their nuclear expansion, right?
It is. The analysis from the war zone details a massive shift in their nuclear modernization.
Right. They used to rely on those older liquid-fueled DF-5 missiles.
Yeah, but now they're aggressively moving to mobile solid-fuel missiles. We're talking about the DF-31, the DF-41, and the newly revealed DF-61.
Okay, so why does the shift from liquid to solid fuel matter so much operationally?
It completely changes the timeline of a launch. liquid fuel is highly volatile, so the missiles usually sit empty. You have to fuel them up before a launch, which takes hours.
And I imagine with satellite surveillance, spending hours fueling a missile is just painting a massive target on your back.
Exactly. Solid fuel missiles, though, are cast with the fuel already inside. They can sit in a silo for years and launch at a moment's notice.
Wow. Okay, speaking of silos, there are reports of hundreds of new ones being built in places like Yumen, Hami, and Ordos.
Huge fields of them, yeah.
So my question is this a shell game? Like, hide a few missiles among hundreds of empty silos to confuse us, or are they really filling all of them?
U.S. intelligence currently assesses that this is not a shell game. They believe China intends to load a live missile into every single one of those silos.
Every single one. That's terrifying.
It is. And when you add in their sea-based advancements, like the JL-2 and upcoming JL-3 submarine-launched ballistic missiles, the operational warhead count is projected to push past 1,000 by 2030.
Over 1,000. Okay, so if China is building capability at that scale, it begs the question, how is the U.S. industrial base responding?
Well, they are actively trying to reach a wartime footing. The CSIS analysis of the U.S. defense industrial base shows a massive surge recently.
Right, I read that roughly 10,000 new firms entered the market in just the past 2 years.
Yeah, it's a huge influx. And non-traditional defense obligations. So money going to newer, non-legacy companies hit over $122 billion in fiscal year 2025.
That is a lot of capital shifting around.
It is. Plus, overall munitions contract obligations are up 330% since 2010. The Pentagon is pushing a dual strategy here to handle this.
Okay, and the first part of that is what they call magazine depth, right?
Yes. Magazine depth is about building large, reliable stockpiles of high-end, exquisite interceptors.
Like the multi-year agreements to increase PAC-3 MSE interceptor capacity to 2,000 a year.
Exactly, and pushing THAAD interceptor production to 400 a year.
But here's where I have to push back a bit, or at least ask the obvious question. Those high-end missiles take years to build and cost millions of dollars each.
They do, yeah.
So what happens when adversaries just swarm us with cheap drones? We can't shoot down a $10,000 drone with a $4 million Patriot missile.
And that is the exact vulnerability the Pentagon is trying to solve with the second part of their strategy, which is magazine breadth.
Okay, magazine breadth. Yeah. So this is the push for cheap, attritable mass.
Exactly. Fighting mass with mass. The Air Force has this family of affordable mass missile program, or FM.
Right. And their goal is to get the unit cost of a cruise missile down to just $218,000.
Which is incredibly cheap for a cruise missile. And alongside that, there's the $1.1 billion drone dominance program.
Oh, right. Aiming to field 300,000 drones by 2027.
Yeah. But, as you know, none of this works without the raw materials to build them. You can't just wish 300,000 drones into existence.
Right. The supply chain fixes. Yeah. The CSIS report highlighted a 321% increase in U.S. government investment in rare earth projects.
Exactly. Trying to break that reliance on China for raw materials. And they're making massive investments in solid rocket motor suppliers, too.
Like L3 Harris. Right?
Yeah. You need the motors and the magnets if you're going to build all this stuff domestically.
Okay. So that's the theory of this industrial wartime footing. But we're actually seeing these weapons and strategies actively deployed in current hot zones right now.
We really are. The Middle East is a prime example of this asymmetric warfare playing out in real time.
Let's talk about that. Looking at the recent Al Jazeera and ISW reports, there's been some serious escalation.
Yeah, there were joint U.S.-Saudi airstrikes in Iraq that killed 20 members of the Iran-backed Popular Mobilization Forces, or PMF.
Right. And then following that, President Trump actually suspended further U.S. bombings, citing that good talks were taking place.
He did. But despite that suspension, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, launched a surprise ballistic missile attack on U.S. bases.
Which is wild. Now, Zini Takam intercepted the attack.
It did, yeah. And notably, five of those missiles were actually intercepted over Jordan. But we have to look at Iran's broader strategic aims here.
Right. It's not just about simple retaliation for the airstrikes.
No. Iran is actively trying to secure international recognition of its absolute control over the Strait of Hormuz.
The major oil choke point.
Exactly. Oman actually proposed a joint management plan to stabilize the strait, but Iran completely rejected it.
Wow. So they are insisting on full control of their side of the strait.
Yes, and they're using these strikes to demonstrate they have the leverage to shut down global energy markets if they want to.
And it's fascinating because there's this technological intersection happening, too. Iran is effectively using their own domestic tech, like the 358 cruise missile and the Majid air defense systems, to shoot down U.S. MQ-9 Reapers.
Right. We are seeing the exact drone versus interceptor asymmetric math we just talked about, but used against us.
Yeah. And on top of that, they are reportedly awaiting a shipment of 400 Chinese-made shoulder-fired missiles.
Which directly ties back to what we discussed in Section 1 about China's expanding global defense footprint.
It's all connected. The supply chains are just globally entangled.
They really are. And Iran isn't the only nation leveraging these alliances to sustain a war effort.
Right, let's pivot to Russia and Ukraine. Because Russia is deeply relying on North Korea right now.
Heavily relying on them. The ISW reporting on this is pretty staggering.
Yeah, the report notes that North Korea is actually preparing to send another 30,000 troops to Russia.
30,000 actual soldiers. Ukrainian intelligence is tracking bases being prepared in Voronezh right now just to receive them.
That's a massive influx of foreign infantry. Mm. And meanwhile, North Korea is expanding its own Raisin and Nampo port facilities to handle all this logistics trade.
Exactly. And China-North Korea trade just hit $1.5 billion, which is the highest level we've seen since 2017.
So Pyongyang is really catching in on this crisis.
They absolutely are.
Now, there's also a diplomatic backdrop to all this kinetic action. We saw that President Zelensky recently met with President Trump in D.C.
Right. They met to discuss Patriot missile licenses so Ukraine can start building their own interceptors.
Trying to fix their own supply chain vulnerabilities.
Exactly. And they also discussed potential peace efforts being led by U.S. envoys Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner.
Right. But while those high-level talks are happening, the tactical situation on the ground in Russia is shifting in a really fascinating way.
This is one of the most interesting parts of the recent intelligence.
Yeah, the Foreign Policy Report details this new Wildberry strategy by Ukraine.
Right, which completely reframes how we look at logistics targets.
For context for the listener, Ukraine has been conducting these deep strikes into Russia. But not just on oil refineries anymore. They are hitting warehouses belonging to a company called Wildberries.
Right. And Wildberries is essentially the Russian equivalent of Amazon. It's their massive e-commerce giant.
Which naturally raises the question, why waste advanced, scarce, long-range strike capabilities on an e-commerce company? I mean, is this just to annoy Russian consumers?
Not at all. It's a brilliant, if brutal, strategic move. You have to realize that in a total war economy, massive e-commerce logistics hubs are dual-use infrastructure.
Okay, meaning they aren't just shipping winter coats and boots.
Exactly. The same hyper-efficient algorithms and sorting machines that can route a million consumer packages can just as easily route military uniforms, drone parts, and medical kits to the front lines.
Wow. Okay, so by destroying a Wildberries hub, Ukraine is literally crippling Russia's underlying wartime logistics network.
Yes, they are breaking the supply chain. Plus, these massive warehouses are located on the outskirts of major cities.
So striking them forces Russia to divert their air defenses away from the front lines in Ukraine to protect commercial warehouses back home.
Exactly. It stretches their air defense grid to the breaking point, and it undeniably brings the physical reality of the war home to the Russian public.
That is asymmetric warfare at its peak.
It really is, and it seems to be working because Russia is showing signs of severe desperation in the information space.
Right. The ISW noted that the Ukrainian general staff discovered Russia is using AI-altered footage, deepfakes, to fake battlefield advances in places like Billy Kolodia's.
Yeah, when you have to digitally render fake victories because your logistics are collapsing, it reveals a lot about your structural integrity.
It really does. Wow. So just bringing this all together for the listener, the scope of what we've covered today is massive.
It covers almost every major domain of modern conflict.
Yeah. We're witnessing an era where economic and industrial capacity is just completely intertwined with national defense.
From satellite gigafactories in China to Amazon-style logistics hubs in Russia.
Exactly. All of it is just as vital as nuclear silos and interceptor missiles now.
It really is the new reality of global security.
Which leaves us with a final, pretty provocative thought to ponder. As the U.S. and its allies push for both exquisite, expensive weapons and cheap, attritable mass, what happens when commercial supply chains become the primary targets of warfare?
Right. If a massive e-commerce warehouse is a highly effective, valid military target today,
how will global supply chains adapt to the wars of tomorrow? Will they even survive?
It's a vulnerability we really haven't solved yet.
Definitely something to mull over. Well, that wraps up this operational briefing. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the source material. Keep asking questions, keep looking beyond the headlines, and we'll catch you next time on The Lowdown.